This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 438 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee Davis Thayer Facility Analysis Meeting, held on Thursday, January 14, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the municipal building. The remainder of the committee and those participating from the public were all remote via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. So let's listen to this segment of this Davis Thayer Facility Analysis Meeting of January 14, 2021.
Okay, with the time being 5:37, I'm going to call this meeting to order. We have to take roll call vote for attendance. So Judy Pond Pfeffer.
Here.
Mary Jane Schofield. MJ, can you hear me?
She's muted.
She's here. Okay. Annalise Stokes, I'm here too. Okay, great. We need to review the past minutes from our December 9th meeting, which you have seen, and I will entertain a motion to accept, approve those minutes.
So moved.
There's a second. From MJ, I could see it. Okay, great. So now we'll vote to approve. Judy Pond Pfeffer?
Yes.
MJ Schofield? I can't hear you at all.
I find sometimes if I talk, the microphone kind of adjusts over time.
For MJ? Oh, no. Should
MJ, if you turn your video off, can we, does that improve the sound?
No. Bummer. We're gonna need you.
If I may, the next step might be to check her inputs. If she's got a multiple microphone input, she may have selected the wrong one.
MJ, I think you can turn your video back on.
And do you have any speakers or headphones or anything plugged into your computer? Gonna call us?
Oh, yeah, you could call in for the voice.
Plan B.
Right. Okay, so we're just waiting. In the meantime, MJ, can you give me a thumbs up if you approve our minutes from December 9th? Yes, great. Thank you. So while MJ's calling in, I'm going to share my screen to look at the Oh, actually, I don't have the share, Sarah. I thought it was working, but it's
okay. I can I adjusted that. You should have it soon.
So to review, this is our process. So we've been on stage one, information gathering. We've completed phase one, which was looking at through our policy, getting the enrollment forecast through McKibben, the DT facilities report from 2013, which we reviewed, and the facilities report, which was from Castle Booz and Associates. We're currently in phase two, which is gathering staff, student, family perspectives, community perspectives. Tonight, we're going to be hearing about staffing, transportation, the district map, financial considerations, and physical distancing factors, which will round out our stage one of our process. MJ, are you on with audio? Maybe should MJ hang up and come back on?
I think she's going to try it.
Okay. Okay, so she's going to try that. I feel like we can't move ahead without her. I wish I had some elevator music or something to entertain everybody, but I don't.
It would be a good feature for them to add.
I've thought that a couple times, because if you play it through your phone and it goes into the computer, it doesn't sound right. It gets like sort of glitchy. It would be a good feature. So I apologize to all the community members on the call. We're having some technical difficulties with audio. So we're just waiting for our subcommittee member, MJ Schofield, to jump back on the call, and hopefully she'll have audio at that time. And then we're going to move ahead with our meeting. We do have a hard stop at 6:45 tonight, but if we're not finished with our discussion, that's fine. We'll just schedule another meeting to finish it up.
There she is.
Hi, MJ. We're glad you're back.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes. Hooray.
That was weird.
That was weird.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So we're ready to get scheduled. We're ready to get started. We reviewed our process. We're ready to hear from the district as far as those stage one, phase two factors. So take it away, Sarah, Miriam.
Thank you. I can share. Should I share my screen? That way everybody has the same information that we're talking about. Miriam and Erica, who is here with us tonight, put together much of the financials related to this presentation. And we're here to give you kind of some information related to those factors. I will say that the assumption going into putting this together is for FY22 with Davis Thayer closing and students going to Miller Elementary School. It doesn't involve any like phased plan. It's just sort of kind of straightforward FY22 assumption. So I just wanted to put that out there. Miriam and Erica are going to start. Erica, for those who are joining us, is our payroll coordinator, and she is also doing an internship for School Business Administration and is giving us additional analysis. And it's wonderful to have her. So Miriam, I'll turn it over to you and Erica.
Great. Thanks. I'm going to turn it over to Erica to talk a little bit about enrollment first and transportation, and I will pick up after that. And Steph.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Miriam. Thank you, Sarah. So this infographic regarding enrollment These enrollment projections for FY22 are based on the McKibben forecast pre-COVID. You'll find from the infographics the total enrollment for both Davis Thayer and Keller if you go down to page 2 is 537 students. Separately, we would need 28 classroom sections, 11 at DT, and 17 at Keller. But combined, we could reduce classroom sections to 25, which would be a reduction of 3 FTE.
And I would just add that these are projected FY22 enrollment figures and possible. This is a possible combination of class sections. Nothing at this point is obviously set in stone, but this is just the estimates that we are projecting at this time.
Can I actually interrupt for a minute too? I'm thinking it would probably be easier if we went through one section at a time and then had a discussion on that section rather than hearing all the information and then trying to sort of process and formulate questions based on everything. So just let us know when you're done with the first session and then we'll do our discussion. Thanks.
Okay, so relative to any discussion on enrollment, again, as Erica said, we're looking at 11 current sections in Davis Thayer and 17 at the Keller School. Combined enrollment is estimated and projected to be about 537 students with 25 sections. So we would potentially be looking at a reduction of 3 FTEs in classroom sections, in classroom teachers. And so that would conclude the enrollment section.
Gotcha. Sarah, is there any way, it's Jen Gargan, is there any way that you can zoom in so that it's a little bigger? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, great. So subcommittee members, Judy, MJ, do you have questions on the first enrollment section?
No, thank you.
What are the class sizes now?
Class sizes now are a little tricky in COVID times with students also from each school going to the VLA, but typically our class sizes could range anywhere from 15 to 24. Most of our class sizes are around 18 to 19 in a typical year.
Okay, so that doesn't look so bad.
This would be within school committee guidelines.
Yeah. Okay. That's my only question, Elise.
Okay. And right, so it looks like those three, the reduction of the 3 FTE would be first, second, third grades, right? That's where the classes would be combined.
It would appear that way.
One thing that I would just note is that these are projected numbers. I do anticipate that we're going to see some funny enrollment trends next year. There are families who kept kids out of school in kindergarten. And so they may be starting school next year. So our kindergarten numbers may be a little bit higher than expected compared to first grade numbers. So these are just based on the projections. I do anticipate maybe a little bit of up and down fluctuation in K and one.
So, okay, with fluctuation, I mean, what would be the high for K and the high for one?
I think we would aim to keep class sizes, kind of within a certain range for class size guidelines, but it could be a situation where there are 3 first grade classes versus 5 kindergarten sections, for example. We would make adjustments depending upon what the enrollment actually ended up being. And I don't have the I don't have this year's numbers right in front of me, but these are the projected numbers. We also have kindergartners who are homeschooled who may come and join us in first grade as well.
Yeah. That all makes me nervous. And combining the two and basing it on the projections, and then everybody comes back to school. Everyone who hasn't been there this year is there. And then everything blows up.
So kindergarten always has a bit of fluctuation in terms of making and watching carefully the enrollment based on what we have in February for registrations and then what continues on through the spring and into the summer.
I would also say that our current kindergarten enrollment at Davis there is a total of 32 students in two sections with one, well, I guess I would say three sections because one is virtual. So that would be the incoming first grade class. And at Keller, they're currently at 35 with two sections and a third being virtual. That's okay. Based on the December enrollment, end of November.
Okay, with these projections, where does the VLA fall into this?
So the VLA is included in the projections at this point in time because we are
in this slide that we're looking at, Miriam. I'm sorry to
the documents, the pages that you're looking at includes full and includes a projection as if we were going to be full and in person in September. So anyone who's in the VLA now is included in the figures that you're looking at.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
I have a question. What is the inclusion estimate?
So those are students from our STRIVE program who are spending time in inclusion in gen ed classrooms that we anticipate seats for, particularly at the kindergarten level. We want to make sure that there's availability and wouldn't necessarily want to have, you know, more than 22 students in a class. We'd need to save some space for students who might be in those classes for inclusion purposes.
Okay, so I think we'll move to staffing now. I'm gonna take the community comments, citizens comments at the end. So staffing, Miriam or
sure,
Erica?
Sure.
You want me to take it, Miriam?
Please.
if we could scroll down a little bit. The possible staffing reductions overall, we could see a total of 10.5 FTEs for an estimated salary reduction of approximately $802,000. This is an early best guess estimate. With 88 special education students, we expect the providers to follow these students.
And I would add that the 88 students that Erica referred to are a combined number of IEP students, students with IEPs that are at Keller and Davis there currently. That number would potentially fluctuate as well. In general, like this is a best guess at this point in time. We certainly have an impact bargaining component to this. And we would expect at some point when a decision is made that we would meet with the FEA and there's a process that we would go through relative to staffing. But as we anticipated, we do anticipate that many services would still need to be provided to students as they were attending Keller, and some of the service providers would need to follow them, many of them. In fact, we need to follow the students. So happy to answer any questions you might have relative to staffing.
Okay, Judy?
No questions. I mean, these are all estimated you know,
that's correct.
Everything is estimated. And I accept the professionalism and the knowledge that went behind doing these graphs. So I have no questions that your numbers don't tally or that you should have more or you should have less. I think it's the best guesstimate at the time, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
MJ?
Well, what Judy is saying is correct, that, you know, these are all projections. There's nothing set in stone. And I mean, I am curious, though, because that based on the projections that, you know, we just heard a few minutes ago, there was reference to three, you know, sounds like teaching positions, three full-time employees. And this one is showing 6.8 teaching professionals. Are those, is that everybody combined? Just looking for clarification.
Yeah, so the 3.0 referenced earlier would be specifically related to classroom teachers. Teaching professionals as a whole would represent any FEA Unit A member.
Got it. Thank you, Miriam.
You're welcome.
Nothing else, Elise.
Okay, and I don't think I have anything else. It's just the last sentence, many special education services will need to follow the students to an alternative school setting at Keller. Obviously that depends on team meetings happening in the spring and IEPs and whatnot, but we know that all special ed services will still be provided. So I think that's absolutely an important, when I saw the word many, I was like, oh, but that sounds like not everybody's gonna get their services. I think, Is it because, you know, maybe a speech therapist, for example, at Keller could absorb a couple kids, but then they might need more speech therapy services. So then another SLP would go to Keller to provide services for those DT kids.
So I would say that that all students would receive the special education services as identified in their IEP, and I apologize for that confusion, because that was certainly not my intent. My intent was to say that whatever special ed students services students would need would be provided by many of the existing current special ed service providers that are currently employed either at Davies Fair or at the Keller School. The nuances could be making efficiencies in terms of travel, for example, for some of our providers where it might be a part-time at both schools would now be a full-time, and then looking at that on a district level and maintaining as many service providers as we're able to. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yep. Thank you. Okay, so we can move to other cost savings.
Other potential cost savings, basically they approximate to $21,000. And as you can see, it's pretty much the materials and supplies. We have two copiers at Davies Thayer, and we have some substitute teacher costs that will be not needed for that school.
We do think that the materials and supplies that are currently in the budget for Davies Thayer would follow the students again, and there would be costs associated with it, with classroom setup, and certainly any materials that Davies Thayer teachers might need to bring with them to Keller would be available to them to do that. So the savings for materials and supplies would be very minimal, but we're not likely to see that the copiers would move over, for example. So, questions?
That makes sense. Judy or MJ, questions?
No, thank you.
I do not have any, thanks.
Okay. I guess my question is just why would why might there be 15,000 allocated for substitutes? Is that because they're not going to be filling those positions that were estimated, you know, that might be reduced?
So on an annual basis, we look at our substitute budget as a whole. And so we would make an allocation based on spending as a whole for substitutes. This year, all bets are off, yeah. I should say. But based on reductions in classrooms, district wide potentially, there could be a reduction of roughly $15,000, which is the amount that was specifically allocated for the Davis Thayer School for the 11 sections there. Hypothetically, is it possible that we could still need that 15,000? I think as we get closer to budget development and we see where our expenditures are going to fall relative to substitutes, we can see whether or not we can have a need for that additional 15,000. But I'm estimating at this point that 15,000 would be able to be reduced.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you. Okay, moving on to transportation.
Transportation, maybe to a surprise, we expect to break even with transportation. While ridership has decreased due to the pandemic, we anticipate an increase in ridership when we return to full in-person learning. We do not anticipate any additional cost appearance for Davis Thayer students as the eligibility will increase at no fee to them.
So we're currently utilizing 6 buses between the Davis Thayer and the Keller School, and we would anticipate that we would still need 6 buses to transport. As Erica mentioned, the number of the eligibility would increase for families in the Davis Thayer district because they are in excess of 2 miles from the Keller School. So they would be eligible for transportation without fee. That would not be a reduction in revenue to the district at this point in time because the majority of those families are already not riding the bus because likely they're able to walk to school or they have found another way to get to school, but they're not going to be likely to walk to the Keller School. And so we're anticipating that they will, access the bus.
Okay, and those on, same as now, those on free and reduced lunch don't pay.
Right, by law, Mass General law requires any students who are eligible for free or reduced lunch to be eligible for free busing. We do require that they sign up, but they would be eligible at no cost, no fee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Judy, MJ, questions?
My only comment is all during this whole facilities analysis, one of my major concerns was the fact of the cost of busing if the Davis Thayer students to go to Kelleher. But where it's, I never thought about the fact of over 2 miles, but it's probably over 2 miles for the majority of them. And so that they would be able to ride free. And I think that's excellent. I'm very pleased with that. Thank you.
Agreed, good point, Judy. MJ, any transportation comments, questions?
The buses that service Davis Thayer now, those are full?
I wouldn't say that they're full, no. But I would say that there would be increased ridership. And by now, I guess I will say that I typically looked at last year's ridership because this year's ridership is not really comparable. Because there's at least a 30% decline in ridership, and we've asked parents to find alternate means of transportation. So when I look at, while ridership is less at Davis Thayer, and I don't anticipate that buses are full for next year, I would expect that ridership would go up because while students aren't riding to Davis Thayer now from the Davis Thayer district, they're either walking or they're getting driven, but now they're going to have to either walk or be driven to a location that is in excess of 2 miles in most cases from their home. And so I would expect that they would ride. However, when we go to register students, if the ridership is not there, we can make a determination that we may not need 6 buses and we may be able to do it with 5 buses. That remains to be seen as to what choices parents make as to how their children are going to get to school.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Building costs history.
So building cost history, as you can see, the last 3 years of building costs, let me just clarify that costs for the building are represented in the town's general fund budget. They are not part of the school department's budget. And the costs that you see in terms of how much they've spent for the past 3 years approximate an average of $280,000 a year. With last year being about $273,000. When I call your attention to the 2021 budget, you can see the bottom line on 2021 budgeted for the town is $145,670. This is a reduction of about $130,000. And I think you're seeing it here because the town got out in front of us, in front of this committee, back when they were developing their 2021 budget. And as a result, they budgeted for the anticipated closure of the Davis Thayer. And you can see that in their bottom line at this point. So that is going to be something that the town is going to have to adjust for the current fiscal year. And then going forward, I would anticipate that this is what they would budget in 2022, which would be about a savings of $130,000 overall. And I'm guessing that, and having not been part of that conversation, I'm guessing I can see the reduction. You can see the reductions in custodial staff, a little bit in natural gas and heat, not very much in electricity. And then some of the supplies and materials that you can see where the reductions have been made, and then a reduction in fire alarm services, because if you don't have people in the building, potentially you don't need fire alarm services. So that's looking at a potential savings that may have already been realized on the town side of $130,000.
Gotcha. And just to remind everybody, this is we're all our work on the subcommittee is following policy FCB, which is the Franklin Public School Committee Retirement of Facilities Policy. And it calls for us to look at all these factors. So that's why Miriam and Erica have included this type of information here. So thank you, Miriam. That makes sense. Judy or MJ, any questions on this?
No, thank you.
I do not.
Alternative uses of the building.
So the policy also speaks to alternative uses of the building. And I guess I'll preface this with saying that, you know, we've had some internal conversations about alternative uses for the building, and what how else we could use that building as an educational facility. However, and any use would certainly have to be in aligning with our mission and our strategic plan. And while I think we've come to this point because we feel like the building is really an impediment to the current instructional program, you know, and the feeling may be that if it's not an elementary school, I don't know that we would put middle school or high school students in that building either. So focusing instead, unless the school committee is prepared to continue the building, to continue to use the building in an educational capacity of some sort, then the committee would make a determination and vote to turn the building over to the town, at which point, process-wise, it would be up to the council and the discretion of the of the council to determine how the building gets used, or whether it's rented or sold or repurposed for town use, or any other options that they would consider. But at this point, I don't think that we as a school department necessarily feel that the building would be able to be used in an education related capacity.
Right. And this is part of the hardest part about thinking about this is sort of not knowing. On our questionnaire, a lot of people just said, please, no condos, no more condos, don't turn it into a pizza place or a nail salon. You know, and it's like we don't have any control over that piece. It's such a beautiful building and such an amazing location, and that part's really hard. But as a school committee, as Miriam said, we would vote to turn the building back to the town if we didn't have any use for it educationally, which is tough. Any Judy or MJ, any comments on this?
The only thing I would say is that in reference to the Davis Thayer building and the little red brick schoolhouse, it has to be an educational, quote unquote, related capacity. And I think it would be very difficult to find, based upon the age of the building and what the building needs to go forward, to have another educational related capacity working out of the Davis Thayer building. So I applaud the decision or the thinking of the administration and turning it back to the town. Thank you.
MJ, anything to add?
At this point, and based on the discussions that have taken place, before this committee was put in place, the whole thing was about, what did they say? We could save $1 million if we shut Davis Thayer tomorrow.
Right.
And that's it. So why would the school department even consider continuing to use the building when we've been essentially pressured to move in a different direction? So my thought is, if in fact the Davis Thayer is closed, turn it back to the town, and the town council can make up their minds. They can do whatever they want with it, except do condos. They can do whatever they want, and they will. Very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay, so to summarize, overall summary of cost savings.
Yeah, so you can see the overall summary, which is just under $1 million. It's roughly $950,000 as an overall. And again, an estimate based on our best guess at this point in time. So I'm happy to answer any questions, or I can turn it over to Dr. Hearn to speak about the continuity of the instructional program.
Okay, if MJ and Judy don't have any questions about the summary, then we can turn it over to Dr. Hearn.
Not at this time, thank you.
I'm good, thanks, Elise.
I'll talk a little bit about the continuity of instructional and community programs. This is not going to be all inclusive. This is also a preliminary analysis. And although I have gotten to know the Davis Thayer Elementary School and well over the past 3.5 years, I don't know everything within those instructional and community programs, as well as a school principal or certainly the faculty and staff there would. So I say this humbly. But did look to take a look at some of the community programs and connections, as well as thinking through, I think, some additional cost factors that the committee should consider with this possibility. So in general, I think what you've heard, this is a bit of a narrative around the staffing piece, which is that we would have classrooms of comparable size
students at the Keller Elementary School, and that all students' needs would be met through their IEPs or English language learners for their English language development. And we would have the services follow the students to the Keller Elementary School. There have been a lot of questions about Title I, which is certainly a financial consideration. So we did a bit of an analysis related to Title I. We received Title I through a targeted assistance approach. And right now, these funds are allocated to Parmenter and Davis Thayer based on the percentage of students from low socioeconomic backgrounds. And we use Title I funds to support additional literacy and mathematics interventions to qualifying students. There has been some question about whether or not those funds would get allocated in the same way based on socioeconomic percentages changing. And so I did a quick analysis related to free and reduced meal percentage for our kind of the relevant elementary schools as part of this study. And currently in FY21, Davis Thayer is 26% and Parmenter is 30%. And those are our two Title I designated schools. I include Oak, because Oak is in third with 15%, and Keller on its own with 326 students is 10%. If Davis Thayer and Keller Elementary would combine populations at 540 students, which is based on current enrollment, 537 is the projected forecast, there's an estimated weighted average of 16.3%. So that still leaves this as the second school in terms of, if things were to remain the same, the second highest elementary school in terms of free and reduced lunch percentage. And so Title I funding could still be allocated and could follow the students to the combined elementary school under this formula. And in terms of how we would allocate that funding, the grant would be written in a way that complies with the requirements of the grant. And what it would mean is that we could not spend we could not allocate more money to Davis Thayer Keller Elementary combined than Parmenter based on the percentage of free and reduced lunch. If Oak Street were to surpass the Davis Thayer Keller Elementary combined percentage, then funding would need to be allocated to students at Oak Street Elementary School. I gave 2 years worth of data just for comparison, so that you could see that. And in FY20, it would have been 16.9%. And happy to take any questions you have about that. But the bottom line is Title I funding could still be applied and support Davis Thayer Elementary students.
Judy or MJ, any questions or comments on this piece?
I'm all set with this, thank you.
I don't have any, thank you.
Okay, continuing on, one of the things that we have heard in terms of programming and services for students is the specialized professional development and training of the Davis Thayer staff, specific towards the students and the students' needs at Davis Thayer. And so this specialized knowledge should be thought about as we think about, excuse me, a potential transition. A couple community programs came to mind given the Davis Thayer proximity to the center of town. One is the relationship with Dean College and how students from Dean College in the past had served as mentors to children at DT, which I think has been meaningful for both the children at DT and the mentors at Dean. And so that is something that I would just point out in terms of continuity of programming, which would be challenging. And there are other things too, including the proximity to the food pantry and proximity to the library, which are easily accessible from the Davis Thayer School. and would be more challenging and more difficult from Keller. I know that there had been some events where students would walk to the food pantry to make the donations and walk to the library for a field trip. We included solutions. Students would still be able to access solutions before school and after school program. And just want to put out on the table too, some consideration related to the parent communication councils at both schools, which I think has a cultural piece, and then also a financial one as well, which is part of, I think, kind of they're independent organizations, but also part of sort of peripherally some financial considerations. We thought about physical distancing as well. We're thinking about the fall in a way that, I guess optimistically, it won't be back to normal. We know that there are going to be things from the pandemic that will need to continue forward. I guess I'm hoping that 6 feet of distancing is no longer needed once vaccines are widespread and applied in the community. But we considered what physical distancing implications there would be with more students at Keller Elementary. And basically, if we're in a position where we have to be at 6 feet of distancing, Keller Elementary would need to be in a hybrid model. The Davis Thayer students would be able to join in that and be part of the hybrid model at 6 feet of distancing, just in additional classrooms. That would be across all grade levels. At 3 feet of distancing, the Davis Thayer students would be able to fit into the Keller Elementary School. The Keller Elementary School was built with 5 grade level classrooms at each grade level. And so there is some additional space there, which is why, as we consider bringing KN1 full and in person, there are classrooms there that could accommodate relocated classrooms currently, but it certainly wouldn't be everyone full and in person under the current circumstances. So if we were in person, the Davis Thayer students could fit in those classrooms. And if we were at 6 feet of distancing, I think we would be hybrid across all classrooms anyway.
Okay, we can take a pause there and go back to that first chunk after Title I. Which I think it's so important when we talk about Davis Thayer to talk about the staff and all their strengths and their expertise with trauma-informed care and knowing their students and loving their students and teaching them so amazingly. It's like that whole community culture piece is such an important part of DT. And so that's, I think, something that we need to be thinking about at the forefront the whole time, as far as us looking, finishing our process, evaluating our options. We need to keep that at the forefront, and then bringing this to the school committee and making sure that the full school committee understands that piece as well. I know that they take a lot of pride in their expertise and their compassion and understanding for those students, and that's something that, like, we can't really write down on a piece of paper, we can't put numbers next to it, but it's so important, and something that will certainly bring, those relationships are really important, those connections, and as far as moving ahead for the students and for the staff, maintaining those relationships is important. Judy or MJ, any comments or questions on that section?
No, not at this time. Thank you.
I've got something about solutions, though.
Okay, we can skip to solutions.
Okay. All right. The solutions program, my understanding is that there is a limit of how many children can be in the program. So how many DT kids utilize solutions, and how many Keller kids are utilizing solutions? And will there be, I mean, will everybody be able to be, you know, part of the program?
So I don't know if Miriam has quantitative information in front of her. We may have to do a little bit of research and bring some of those numbers back to you. In terms of the limits to solutions, some of it's a space issue depending upon the building, and in some places it's not an issue depending upon space. And in places where there are limits and it's not related to space, it's kind of a staffing to student ratio and, you know, part of a kind of a financial consideration related to we need X number of additional students to add so that we can fully support the finances of bringing on an additional staff member, which would be required for the ratios. So there are kind of two factors that go into some of the limits that are placed in solutions. And I think in the big picture, if you want more backup for this, I would need to get a little bit more information unless Miriam has it in front of her.
Yeah, no, I don't, but I can follow up with our solutions director of lifelong learning and get that information.
Okay, and thank you. And one thing that I'd really like to have clarified. So if Davis Thayer classrooms are, you know, moved down to Keller, when they get there, are they going to be combined with the students who are in the Keller district now? Shuffled around and integrated into the school and not be, oh, we're DT kids. What are they going to be? Are they going to be DT Keller or are they going to be DT kids at Keller?
So that's a great question on two levels. Numerically, the way the model is laid out for you and for your consideration involves the students combining, otherwise combining into those 25 sections, I think it's 25 sections, versus if they were to not combine and we were to think about having distinct DT sections, we would have kept it at 28. So the 25 sections with a reduction of 3 classroom teachers reflects the model where they would be combined together. That's sort of a numerical piece, but you know, kind of a on a culture piece and a culture level, and thinking about the having an inclusive and welcoming and safe feeling environment, there would need to be, and I think the educators that we have in the district are very, very aware of this and mindful of this around. What we continue to call a thoughtful transition, there would need to be steps taken to assist that process of coming together and building a community and having it feel and having it feel good, having it feel like a welcoming, inclusive and inviting place.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we can move ahead to considerations for Keller and Annie Sullivan.
Yeah, these are just a couple of things that we thought should be on your radar screen related to the two schools, because this does have some spillover effect at Annie Sullivan, because according to the facilities analysis report, combining Davis Thayer and Keller Elementary school population would result in an overutilization of Keller Elementary alone. And so part of this is dependent upon rethinking the space a little bit at Annie Sullivan, because the combined space would be a more reasonable value of 80%. Because the enrollment decline that we're expecting to see over the next decade is not in the elementary schools, it's actually in the middle level. And we've experienced a middle level decrease over the past couple of years. And so we would, want to be thinking about that. as part of a thoughtful transition process, we would want to think carefully about how the Annie Sullivan space is used. There may be, you know, some financial costs that go into adjusting the space for certain reasons. To MJ's question earlier, I think we would want to keep the classroom space intact at Keller Elementary in order to leave it feeling like a whole community. But we would need to be thinking a little bit about the Annie Sullivan space as well. And part of that does include the two classrooms at Keller Sullivan that are rented to BICO Collaborative. We need to think about how this space is used and whether or not we need to continue to use this space for Franklin Public Schools under a new scenario. The lease value is $31,000 annually, so that is another financial consideration that is part of the mix. It's certainly a minor one, but something that we wanted to make sure that you had on your radar screen, and whether we lease the space elsewhere in the district, move it elsewhere in the complex, or discontinue the lease is something that I think we need to talk about and make sure that we give BICO enough communication up front, you know, and early enough for them to be making some decisions if they need to. And of course, didn't want the, we've talked about this a lot, the culture and climate at the Keller Elementary School for students, staff, and families is an important consideration as well. So we just want to kind of be mindful of all the adaptive pieces as well. So didn't feel complete without noting that.
Absolutely, that's so important. Thank you, Sarah. I want to be mindful of time, so we have a little bit more than 10 minutes. I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for citizens' comments, because this whole process, we've always really wanted the perspectives and input.
Can you guys hear what's coming out of my ears?
No. We can hear you.
Oh, she's whispering because she has earbuds in her ears and she doesn't know.
Got a sec.
I'm sorry, I'm distractible. I want to make sure we have enough time for community comments, but I feel like we're going to need to probably schedule a meeting soon to finish talking about this and to look at as far as what are our next steps getting to the school committee. We need to, our process says we need to evaluate options, summarize all the information, list and consider important factors, and then we determine possible options and then present them to the school committee. So that's an important piece that if we now, here, I'm gonna share my screen again. So if we now have all the information from stage one, it's my impression that we do have all that information. I just wanna check MJ and Judy. Do you feel that we have all the information from stage one?
I feel that we have complete information from stage one, phase one, stage one, phase two.
Yes.
I believe that we are in stage two evaluation options.
Gotcha. MJ, you agree?
I agree.
Okay. Just wanted to double check on that one. So at this point, I think the stage one was the part that took so long and had, you know, a lot of like outside independent people that we had to wait on, whereas now the rest of this is really in our hands as far as a subcommittee. So we can, I know we've talked in the past about wanting to move this process along as far as we want to give, you know, the school committee plenty of time to understand all the information and make an informed vote. We want to give families and staff as much time as we can to, you know, understand what's going to be happening here, and then give the district lots of time to plan a really thoughtful transition. And I think that's the most important thing. If the full school committee does decide to vote on this, then a thoughtful transition takes a lot of time and a lot of planning. And so we've talked about that before, not wanting to drag our feet on this process. So I propose at this point, to make sure we still have time for citizens' comments, that we schedule an through email, schedule a meeting soon, maybe next week, to look at a timeline. or next week to really talk about evaluating our options, that stage two, and then be ready to figure out what information we want to present to the school committee as far as like giving them all the information we can to make an informed decision.
I guess I'm quite not understanding what you're saying. Are you saying you are not going to hear any citizens' comments tonight?
No, I want to. That's why I'm trying to like wrap this part up, even though
I think this part is wrapped up. Okay. Let's make an appointment, do the citizens' comments tonight, and make an appointment for next week for a meeting for us to decide how we're going to handle stage two.
That's what I was saying. Maybe I was being.
I agree with you. Let's go.
Great. Let's go. Okay. So citizens' comments. Tonight, if you want to speak, please raise your hand to signal us and wait to be called on. Please state your name and address first and keep it under 3 minutes so we have time for others to have a turn. I'll do my best to document all questions and concerns so we can be sure to address them at a future meeting.
Jen Johnson has her hand raised. I don't know if you can see the individuals. Are you able to see them?
I can, but it's easier if you call on them. Okay. Thanks.
Hi, it's Jen Johnson, 19 Longobardi Drive. So my comment, and I feel confident saying that I think I'm speaking on behalf of several other parents that I've been communicating with during this meeting. This decision, I know it's not a final decision, but the decision to look at the projections to combine Davis Thayer and Keller seems like a decision was made here that none of us really knew was happening. The overall vibe from the Davis Thayer parents right now is we all feel a little blindsided by this. I feel like I missed a meeting, and I don't think I did miss a meeting. And it just feels like, I don't know when this decision occurred that this was what we're gonna do type of thing. And I wish it was included in the agenda because I think more parents would have logged in. The agenda just basically stated we're looking at the timeline and financials, but it didn't say we're going to look at the projection of potentially combining these two schools for the fall. So I just, you know, I know you guys are working really hard on this and I appreciate everything you're doing. I just feel like that was kind of a miss because this was a bigger deal than it was made looked at on the agenda.
Okay, thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Elise.
Anybody else? We've got time.
I can't find the raise hand button.
Okay, that's okay. Just shout it out.
I'm sorry. I'm looking, I'm asking for help and I can't find it. Rebecca Ballinger, 18 Charles Drive. We're lucky enough to have Sarah come and talk to the Davis Thayer staff earlier tonight, so I've already raised this concern with her. But one of the things that this committee has a really good reputation for is its consideration of SEL learning within the whole district. And regardless of, you know, whether or not a decision has been made, I agree that you're following the steps and I do appreciate that. But as a whole, Davis Thayer was really urging a consideration that if the decision was made to close Davis Thayer, to just consider putting it for the year after next. The counselors and the school psychologists have met on several occasions and talked about the fact that next year we're going to see even more need for social emotional learning and support and familiarity and relationships. And there's a lot of concern about what's going to happen with these students, even if the bulk of the staff follow, to go from a pandemic where you're in school maybe a couple days or not at all if you're fully remote, to have to start fresh full-time in a new building with new staff, that's a lot for these children and staff to handle. So we're just asking that if the decision is made to close Davis Thayer, that you at least consider putting it for FY23. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else? You raise your hand or you can just unmute. Julie.
Hey, Julie Ricciardi, 8 Jack's Way, Franklin, DT parent. I just want to comment that I have sent many letters to town council and you guys on school committee, sorry, in advance. And they have point the finger back at you guys every time a school committee made the decision, town council is not making decisions. And tonight, MJ made it pretty clear that that's not the case. And so as a citizen who pays taxes and has kids in the school, I really want clarity on who owns the decision. Is it the town council or is it the school committee? Because it doesn't feel fair to the parents in this that are caught in the middle, that are trying to figure out how to help their kids.
I think we're not typically responding to questions, but I think there's a miscommunication. There's
definitely. Yeah. Okay, Julie. Okay, yeah. The town council will have the final say if the school committee votes to close Davis Thayer, then eventually turn the building back to the town. It's entirely up to the town what will be done with the building. That will not be the school committee's choice at all.
So there's no savings for the schools at the end of the day, right? It goes back to the town other than the building cost, which is $270,000. You're really not, it's not worth uprooting kids' lives for $270,000.
All right, I can't comment on that. I'm just commenting on the process that, you know, we are following and what, you know, what will happen. If we vote to close DT and if we, turn the building back to the town, which will take, not the cost of operating the building, but the cost of all the staff, support staff, it will take that out of the DT budget. Okay. The town is the ones, the town council, they're the ones who are going to ultimately make the decision of what will be done with the building. That will not be the school committee or the school department.
Right. The school committee decides what to do with the school, DT, but the town decides what to do with the building. So we have to make our decision before they can make any decision.
So correct.
That's how that works. Okay, any last comment? Okay, well, thank you, everybody. We will schedule our meeting through email for some evening next week. And then we have no recommendations to the full school committee at this time. And at this point, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Okay, so Judy Pfeffer.
Yes.
MJ?
Oh, yes.
Yep. And Elise Stokes, yes. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Night.
Thanks, Erica and Miriam.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.